Dr. Alan Gregory had taken the red eye in from Los Angeles for his 10:15 with the SecDef. Al, grab a seat. Coffee? Yes, thank you, Dr. Bertano. Tony, the SecDef corrected. He used to work downstairs in SDIO, as I recall. 7 years. The Army made me a lieutenant colonel, and 3 weeks later they offered me an early out, so I took the job at TRW that Dr. Flynn offered. He says you can do software better than anyone in Sunnyvale. For some things. How about SAMs? Gregory nodded. The Army had me in to play with intercepting Scuds. I helped out on the warhead software. Excellent. I want you to find out if the Navy's Aegis system can intercept a ballistic inbound. It'll stop a Scud, but that's only Mach 3 or so. You mean a real ballistic inbound? Yeah, an ICBM. For an ICBM, the terminal velocity is way the hell up there, like Mach 11. That means your targeting window is very small. I'll have to see if the warhead off of SAM will really hurt one of those. Okay, when do I start? Commander Matthews, Tony said into his intercom phone, Dr. Gregory is ready to talk to the Aegis people. Keep me posted, Al. It started in America with the unions. China had long been a bête noire for the labor movement for the simple reason that Chinese workers made less in a day than American union automobile workers made during their morning coffee break. That tilted the playing field in favor of the Asians. So much the better that the government which ruled those workers disregarded human rights. American labor unions are nothing if not organized, and so every single member of Congress started getting telephone calls. Later in the day, demonstrations were held, and though they were about as spontaneous as those held in the People's Republic of China, they were covered by the media, because the newsies belonged to a union too. On top of that came the notices from the religious communities, virtually all of which China had managed to offend. The one unexpected but shrewd development of the day didn't involve a call or letter. Chinese manufacturers located on the island of Taiwan all had public relations agencies in America. One of these came up with an idea. By midday, three separate printers were turning out peel-off stickers with the flag of the Republic of China and the caption, "We're the good guys." By the following morning, shop clerks all over America were affixing them to items of Taiwanese manufacture. The result was that the American public was reacquainted with the fact that there were indeed two countries called China, and that only one of them killed people of the clergy. The other one even played Little League baseball. The draft note arrived in the Beijing embassy early in the morning. Half an hour later, Hitch was in the office on the phone to Foggy Bottom. Yes, that's what we want you to say, Scott Adler told him. They're not going to like it. That doesn't surprise me, Carl. Make it clear to them that the American people demand some sort of amends. You may not talk to us this way, Shen Tang observed. America will not dictate to us. You are not the rulers of the world. We do not claim to be, but we can choose those nations with whom we have normal relations, and we would prefer them to recognize human rights as do all other civilized nations. Now you say we are uncivilized? Shen demanded. I did not say that, Minister. We will not kowtow to you. I reject this note. Shen even tossed it back in Hitch's direction. Very well, Minister. Thank you for the audience. Hitch bowed politely and withdrew. He walked back out to his car for the drive to the embassy. Cliff Rutledge was waiting there. Well? Well, he told me to shove it up my ass in diplo speak. You might have a lively session this morning. The 265th Motor Rifle Division was composed of three regiments. Each regiment was composed of about 1,500 soldiers, about 500 fewer than full strength. What worried Bondarenko and Aliyev most was the lack of artillery. The general scowled in the confines of his staff car. His worst worry was the air situation. He had perhaps 50 usable aircraft in theater, and the pilots got perhaps 70 flight hours per year, barely enough to make sure they could take off and land safely. You know, Andre, I can remember when the world shook with fear of our country's army. Now they shake with laughter. Gennady Yosefovich, it is not as bad as it appears. I agree, it is worse. But to others, we appear strong. We have thousands of tanks, Comrade General. Which was true. They'd spent the morning inspecting monstrous sheds containing, of all things, World War II tanks. Over 900 of them, 3 complete division sets. And there were even troops to maintain them, serviced by the grandchildren of the men who'd used them in combat. Mark Gant was out in the garden during a break in the trade talks. "Mr. Gant," he turned to see Shui Ma, the diplomat spook he'd chatted with before. "Mr. Shui, what do you think of the progress of the talks?"
"If this is progress, I'd hate to see what you call an adverse development."
Shui smiled. "A lively exchange is often more interesting than a dull one. Shui, you accuse us of threatening your national identity because we object to the murders your government committed. Americans don't like it when people commit murder. Those people were breaking our laws."
"Maybe so, but in America, when people break the law, we damn sure don't shoot them in the head when they're holding a goddamn newborn infant."
"That was unfortunate. Shui, to Americans, that was the act of a barbarian." The B word finally got through. "America cannot talk to China in that way, Mr. Gant."
"Look, Mr. Shui, you can run your country as you wish, but there's no law that says we have to do business with you. The average American will not buy something from a fucking barbarian. Do you get it now?"
"If America punishes us, we will punish America."
"Shui, your dicks aren't big enough to get in a pissing contest with us."
And with that, he walked inside. A half hour later, he was on his way out again. The words had been sharp and heated, and neither side had seen any purpose in continuing that day. Adler was up late again, working in his office. Finally, the stew rang. "Adler, Rutledge here, Scott. It didn't go well. They're canceling the 777 order with Boeing, as we thought they would. No concessions at all on the shootings? Zip. Anything to be optimistic about?
Not a damn thing. Any chance that we can make some concession just to get things going?"
"Cliff, the likelihood that Congress will roll over on the trade issue is zero."
"What did that capitalist Diao Ren say?" Zhang asked.
Shen told him what Shui had relayed, word for word.
"And what does he represent?"
"He is assistant to the American Treasury Minister. Therefore, we think he has the ear of both his minister and the American president. I think he gives Rutledge the policy he must follow. Rutledge wants to give us some concessions, but Washington is dictating his words."
"Then you are right to adjourn the talks. You cancel the airplane order?"
"Of course."
"Then that will give them something to think about."
"If they do not walk out of the talks."
"They wouldn't dare."
"Walk away from the Middle Kingdom? Absurd." "Gant said, not in so many words, that we need them more than they need us. And he is not entirely wrong in that, is he?
We do not need their dollars more than we need our sovereignty. Do they really think they can dictate our domestic laws to us?"
"Yes, Shang, they do. They apply an astounding degree of importance to this incident. They call it barbaric."
"Barbaric? They say that to us? And this Gant man says his G is bigger than ours?"
"So Shui tells me." Zhang left. He had to talk this one over with his friend Fang Gan.